Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Lug Nuts and Horsepower on the Blog Talk Radio Network with Fan versus Fan. We welcome you to the show. My name is Patty Rodish, live in Chicago on a beautiful summer day. Welcome in my teammate, Dustin Parks. How are you today?
It is a splendid day here in central Pennsylvania. We had a lot, I'm not going to mince words, we had a lot of rain this morning, and it cleared up nicely, so it is a little bit sticky tonight, and that's the only downside is with all this rain, it hits and then it leaves. It just gets really hot, gets really humid. But I can't complain. We are officially in summer, so that's probably the best news that you can have.
Yeah, I think after the winters we have for both of us, I think this is welcome. I'll take a little warm, a little humidity, a little stickiness over 2-3 feet of snow. So we welcome you to the show. We were supposed to be on last week, and I was supposed to host the show last week, but quite frankly, lost track of the days of the week and forgot it was Tuesday and completely missed the show. So I wanted to apologize, Dustin, over the air and directly for making that huge mistake. And he texted me later. I'm like, wait, what are you talking? I literally dropped my phone. I'm like, wait, what is he talking about? And then it clicked that it was Tuesday, and I brain farted on that one. So I apologize. But we are back at it this week with some news at the end of the show that I will talk about towards the end. But we're going to start off talking a little NASCAR here as we look at the second half of the season. The goal last week on the show was to talk a little bit who highs and lows, who needs some work, things like that, heading into the second half of the season, really, as we make this stretch run for the chase and into the championship run. I wanted to quickly step on some news that came out prior to last week, off week for the Sprint Cup Series. As NASCAR at Kentucky in just a couple weeks will use a different aero package than they used the other mile and a half this season. They announced it just after Michigan. Rumors were rumbling in the garage about this possible change at Kentucky. They're going to have a one-day test for all teams to come down the day prior to Kentucky. All teams can test out this new package, kind of work out the bugs, and then they'll utilize it that next weekend, that weekend at Kentucky. The goal is to find a better package heading into 2016, but also NASCAR did not rule out the possibility of implementing other tracks moving forward, and really one track. Well, using this potential package at one track isn't a good barometer of what could happen at, say, a Chicagoland or a Kansas in the chase. So, and they didn't rule out a change within the chase in terms of an aero package test using a different aero package in the chase. So that's a huge game changer. But then it also was announced today that Darlington will host a tire test next week. For Kentucky, they'll do a tire test and testing out new package, this Kentucky package as well. So NASCAR being very proactive as we head into the stretch of the season. The racing has not been to par. We've talked about it repeatedly on this radio show. But it's nice to see NASCAR willing to step out of the box, even mid-season, and say, look, we know there's work to do, but let's get on this and let's see what we can do as a group. And moving forward, are you for a mid-season change like this, or do you think this should have been something that should have waited until after the season was over?
No, I am all for this change because NASCAR basically is saying, look, we agree with what the drivers are saying. I think the Drivers' Council had a lot to do with this. They were saying, look, we feel that the competition is not as good as it was a year ago, and we are not necessarily blaming the reduction of horsepower. We are not necessarily blaming just the new rules that you implemented. But combining the two together, I think, has hurt the sport. We saw it in the All-Star race whenever Harvick was making such a hard run up to Hamlin to try to get the lead. The minute he got to that point, all Hamlin had to do was move up a lane. The momentum was gone, and Harvick couldn't get it back. So the drivers that saw at that point clearly, look, there's something going on with this package that is causing all this to happen. And they went to NASCAR, and with Goodyear's help, they said, look, we feel that the competition needs to change, and this is how we feel it needs to be done. And if you think about it, this kind of goes back to the days of the Gen 4 car, especially in the later years of it, where the spoil was really cut down very short on the back of the car, but you also had a much softer tire. Now, keep in mind, at Kentucky, they will not have a softer tire. They'll still be running a harder compound two-stage tire like they have been, because there's not enough time to produce what's needed for a softer tire to run it at Kentucky. But this is a step in the right direction, and it's a step to basically start out and say, okay, let's try this. If it works, what do we need to change for New Hampshire? What do we have to change then whenever we head to Pocono? To make the package a happy medium so that the drivers can run these cars and actually have input in how they run, and also make it a lot more enjoyable for the fans to see passing actually on the track instead of just on pit road and just on restarts. I am very happy with this.
I'm not upset about the mid-season change. I know some people were like, why? It's a cost to teams. Yes, it's going to cost. If they do this, so say we go to Kentucky and they ask for Tappy with what they're seeing, and maybe they say, okay, let's, when we go to, like, either New Hampshire or, you know, we head into Indianapolis and all these other tracks, and they want to start implementing this change, this is a great opportunity. The only time you're really going to get the best data is on track and during these races, because that's when teams and drivers are pushing it. That's when the cars are at their best or even at their worst, and they can figure out what works. Tests are great. Open tests are great. But these drivers are not going to be pushing the limit. They are not going to be running side-by-side in these tests. They just don't. It's a lot of single file. You really don't know what these packages are going to do. The best thing to do is put them out there on the track and have them race them in race. Is it going to cost teams? Of course it will. But is it going to pay off down the road in terms of how they're racing if they find a package that works with these cars? Of course it will. So I'm for it. I think it's a great move by NASCAR. I think this is what they need to do. They need to be proactive. They can't be sitting on their hands because fans are tuning out. Like you said, the All-Star race was exciting because they had the segments, but it wasn't exciting because the racing was great. It was because the segments broke everything up and the restarts were crazy and people were going 2-3 wide and they're pushing. But after that, it went single file for 20 laps. So, you know, you go back to Michigan, you go back to, Texas, you go to these tracks last year, we had some great racing last year. We haven't seen it this year. And I think NASCAR and realizes the teams want changes, the fans are looking for changes, and they're making the right move. The changes with new aero packing that they're going to test at Kentucky, it is cutting the spoiler to 3.5 inches. They're reducing the radiator pan to 25 inches and limiting the overhang on the splitter to 1.75 inches. So this is, I believe, more of a package, and this is, and if I remember correctly, when they did the test last fall, this was more of the splitter package and the radiator pan size that a lot of drivers liked. And really did like how the car raced and how it felt in traffic. And so this was more what drivers were looking for. And then NASCAR went the opposite direction. So kudos to NASCAR. We do often, you know, we make our comments and we commentate on them frequently when they don't do things right or we feel like they've done something wrong. But this is such a great move by NASCAR for the betterment of the sport as a whole. And hopefully we see some great racing and they can take that data and maybe go to another track and see if it works on another track. That's all we want as the fans and those who cover the sport and the drivers want. Some other news that happened during the off season, and I'm sure you're on Twitter. You nearly broke Twitter, but Amy Ryman and Dale Earnhardt Jr. got engaged over the holiday, over the off week as they were in Germany.
Well, it kind of was a holiday if you think about it.
Yeah, it kind of was, right? Lots of guys on vacation in different places. So kind of cool, and congratulations to them. If you were following Jeff Gordon's Twitter last weekend at all, he went back to his hometown and went to the very first track he started racing at and got to hang out with fans and drivers and kind of reminisce about what really got his career started. And he'll head into Sonoma this weekend as the odds-on favorite. As they head to the road course this weekend and on the West Coast. So that's a cool kind of way, another cool moment in his final season. And he went back to elementary school, and June 20th was Jeff Gordon Day. So it's kind of cool. So great, kind of fun to follow along with that. Also, this weekend there was racing, not just because Spring Cup Series was off, but the Xfinity boys and girls raced in Chicago along with Iowa for the Cable World Truck Series, where Eric Jones swept the weekend in dramatic fashion. And finally, the bad luck had rid him after weeks and literally weeks of having race winning cars and trucks, but coming out on the short end of the stick, whether it be fuel mileage or just, Casey Kane at Charlotte, we know, or accidents and things that came late in the race in the Camper World Truck Series a few weeks back. But he won. He swept the weekend. I wanted to ask, and he kind of talked about this week after his win in the Xfinity Series at Chicagoland. He kind of asked about just that, like the bad luck, the highs and lows as a young driver, how that plays with your psyche. How big of a lift was this win for them, for both him in the truck, not only chasing Matt Crafton for the title, but also in the Xfinity Series, getting that monkey off his back, the constant almost the last few months. How big of a weekend was it for Eric Jones as a driver to get into the car, drive a complete race, pull into victory lane in both races he was entered this weekend?
Oh, my Lord. That had to be like taking the weight of a 747 off your back or off the bed of your truck and finally sitting it on the ground to say, I don't need this anymore. That had to be so hard on him, going so hard, especially in the truck series, coming close on so many different occasions, only to have it slip away. Whenever he pulled into victory lane at Iowa, I think at that moment, everything finally was off his shoulders. And then at that point, all he had to flat out do was just race. He didn't have to worry about anything else. He had the win in the bag. He's like, all right, I am good. I can do this. He goes to Chicagoland, where he was supposed to go back or go on Saturday night, but obviously we all know what the storms were doing in the Chicago area that on Saturday night. They hit Pennsylvania shortly thereafter, so I knew all about it myself. But then they go in on Sunday, and he does it again. So he had that confidence from Friday night just carry over into the 54 car in that team, and he did it. And think about this. That's two straight wins for that 54 group. First at Michigan with Kyle Busch in his return to the series, no less, and then with Eric Jones getting the job done. So the 54 team is on a roll now. He's got confidence in himself again behind the wheel of the truck. I say, at least in the truck series, Crafton has to be on high alert, because now that Jones has that win, he is going to be gunning for a lot more. And with such a short season for the trucks, every race will be critical, and Jones is going to capitalize.
If you think about it, I mean, if he had won those races, he had the best trucks in it, and you look at Gateway and a handful of others where he had the best truck overall, Crafton's lead would not even be what it is now, and I really think theoretically Eric Jones would have the points lead had he won those races. For Eric Jones and for Matt Crafton, those are the two that everybody watches. They're the two best trucks on track every week. For Matt Crafton now, you look at Eric Jones, like you said, what a huge – I mean, now Matt Crafton's no longer just banking and hoping. I mean, he can't really – he needs to be contending for wins. He needs to be up front leading to laps. He needs to be doing the things to keep himself with the points advantage he has. I mean, you look at at Gateway. He, you know, once Eric Jones had his issues, you know, Matt had his issues. You take away and he finishes top five, that point gap is far out of reach for Eric Jones. Now it's a game changer. I mean, Eric Jones is the one who has all the momentum going into the next couple weeks on the track. So I agree. I think it's a big win for him. But I also think it taught him some lessons, the highs and the lows. Not every week are you going to go out there and be the number one driver. Not every week are you going to go out there and win every race you're in. And I think a lot of drivers go through the stage, and we saw with Kyle Busch when he was just dominating all the time in the Xfinity Series in JGR equipment. He brought his own equipment over, was not as near as dominant as he was in JGR equipment. And it took that learning curve of saying, look, great, I'm only as good as my equipment is going to be. And for Eric Jones, you notice a few times where, he, you know, there was no – the he expected to be when he wasn't leading laps or when he didn't have a great finish. You could tell the rookie driver in him was coming out a little bit chip on his shoulder. Like anything less than what he being up front is unacceptable. And as a rookie and as a young driver, you're going to have seasons. You're going to have races where you're not the number one guy. And I think it was a good lesson for him to learn and really figure out what, you know, how he handles these things. And I think he said it best on Sunday at the Xfinity, when how much those lows really do help, you know, push you to be better on your best days. So it was an interesting race. I unfortunately wasn't there this weekend. They did, as you said, rain out on Saturday night. They ran it on Sunday. It was beautiful here on Sunday in Chicago, and it was an interesting pit road issue about midway through the race. The teams were under caution. NASCAR told the spotters pit road was open, but the flagger and the light never changed to green. About 19 cars, I think, came down pit road at that point to pit, and they all got penalized for pitting too soon and tail end the longest line, which at that point, you know, there were, I only think, 20 or something cars on the lead lap. But NASCAR came out on Monday.
That's what I think was laughable about that. There was so few cars on the lead lap at that point. You really didn't, you all have to go to the back of the longest line. They were better off saying, okay, the cars that waited, you're going to be at the front. And, well, that basically means, okay, instead of starting second, you're going to end up starting fifth. They didn't really lose much, honestly.
No, and it really was, and that's the thing, it really wasn't a huge, it was funny because the drivers were upset, but it really didn't cost. I mean, Eric Jones went on to win the race, but it wasn't just one or two drivers made the mistake, it was a lot of drivers. And they actually came out on Monday and said right out that, look, yeah, it was a mistake, but we tell in all the drivers' meetings, they're told, you have to go based on the flagger and the light on pit road. Drivers don't pay attention to that. They go on what they're told in their ear. And I think it's happened a couple of times in the Cup Series last few seasons where we've seen drivers dip on a pit road because they thought it was open and it wasn't. So, but, you know, it was a mistake that didn't cost Eric Jones too much, but he did end up winning the race, so it wasn't that big of a mistake in the long run. But for a few guys, it cost them. You look at Ross Kenseth, who made his Xfinity Series debut at Chicagoland. He had a great finish. He finished sixth after winning the ARCA race just a few weeks back at Michigan. So a young gun coming up in the racing ranks, trying to be like his dad. And so he had a great finish on Sunday. So the Xfinity Series this weekend is off until July 4th when they race at Daytona. So we will see them in 2 weeks and for the first of NBC's races in just a couple weeks. As we hit the midway point for the Sprint Cup Series with this off weekend, I kind of want to look back for a few minutes on the teams and drivers who you feel like who's clicking on all cylinders right now and who's running on seven cylinders right now, and what teams are you most surprised by their starts to the season going into what we will call the stretch run to the chase?
Well, I tell you, it's extremely, extremely clear who is running on eight cylinders. The two guys that are at the top of the chase standings right now, and we're talking about Jimmy Johnson and Kevin Harvick. Let's face it. Those guys are a class in their own right now. That is how good both of those drivers are. Now, that's not to say that guys like Dale Earnhardt Jr., like Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano aren't running well. They are. But, honestly, Johnson and Harvick are in a class by themselves. The one that surprises me that I thought would start out on about seven cylinders, maybe even six, but has come out guns blazing, is the guy that won at Michigan, or at least achieved the victory whenever NASCAR finally made the call, which, by the way, that Michigan race was laughable. So ugly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I am so impressed right now with how Kurt Busch and that 41 team, after having him away from the track for 3 weeks on suspension, came back and came back with a vengeance. Winning at Richmond, winning at Michigan, with three less races, and he is beating teams that have ran all of the races so far this season, including his teammates of Danica Patrick and Tony Stewart, which, by the way, I think Tony Stewart right now is barely running on four cylinders. He is the guy that I am the least impressed with this season. We've talked about it numerous times on this program since the season began. But you have two of the Stewart-Haas cars that are running exceptionally well. You've got one Hendrick car, but yet you go to the opposite side with Stewart-Haas, and you have the team leader that just is a non-factor. If we were to base a surprise this season so far, it still is that 14 car. And honestly, we're into the stretch run of the season where normally he will be considered, okay, we're into the summer. This is when Stewart picks it up. No, this time I actually think he won't. That's how bad I think it is right now. I don't think he's got it this year.
I think one driver who we never really thought would be running as well as he is running is Martin Truex Jr. I mean, nobody picked him coming into the season to be the guy fastest every week. I mean, he's lost race. He's had races that he should have won in the last few months. He would have 2-3 wins by now. He's got the win from Pocono, which he was already locked in based on points, but, you know, that win just secured him into the chase. That win was coming. I think he's a guy nobody thought would be able to contend with the Kevin Harvicks and the Hendrick Motorsports powered cars, because it's really what it is. It's been Hendrick Motorsports powered cars all season versus really Truex. Penske drivers have not shown the speed in the last 2 months that they had early in the season. I don't really, and it's funny, they've got those wins and we think maybe they're testing, but even when you feel like they've had better cars come to the track, they haven't shown the speed necessary to contend up front. And they've struggled and made mistakes on pit road. And maybe that's all part of that process of having those wins. But I feel like you still don't want to be stumbling into the chase. And we've seen that last year with teams, and it cost them. I think this, you have to come in guns blazing. And you can use the regular season as a test session when you win early, but it's no guarantee when you get in the chase. So I think those are the teams that I feel like are the biggest surprise in how well they ran in terms of overall are the Hendrick-powered cars. But in that realm, you look at Roush Fenway Racing, and on the flip coin of that, Roush Fenway Racing and their struggles this season. They looked like they were finding some things midway to that March and April run, where they showed a lot of speed, and even Greg Biffle at Charlotte was showing a lot of speed, but they have struggled, and they've been non-factors. They had better finishes at Michigan than they would have had the rain not been a factor. They just haven't had the speed. In a track like Michigan, where you expect them to be really fast and show out, we said prior to Michigan, if they're not contending for this win at Michigan, they're in far deeper trouble than anybody really knows and realized. And I think we're seeing that. I think that Tony Stewart as well, I agree with your Tony Stewart sentiments. I hate to say that this is, you know, we're seeing the downside of his career, but we really are. And I don't attribute it to anything that's happened the last few years. I think that's just time, and that's like Jeff Blunt of years back. We talked about this in 2008. He struggled with the race cars, really wasn't competitive, struggled to keep the speed and be up front. And we thought, everybody started talking, well, maybe this is the end. And then we saw the last few seasons where he came out and had better seasons. You look at last year. I think Tony Stewart's in that same pattern right now. And the cars are to his liking, and they don't drive how he likes to drive these cars. And I think maybe this new road package is a little bit better for a Tony Stewart and even a Jeff Gordon, because it's more to what we had similar to last year in terms of overall feel. And that's what everybody said. It's more to what we had last year. So I think are we throwing in a towel for Tony Stewart this season? Unless he wins at a Sonoma or he wins at a Watkins Glen or he goes to Daytona, which he can very well win, I don't really see him being a contender for the chase this season. And it's a shame, but I think there's still lingering issues health-wise and maybe even psyche-wise with this package. But I think for Tony Stewart, he's at the end. He's beginning the end of his career, and he might fight it, and I think we see Jarrett all the time. But I think if he looks to Jeff Gordon of any indication, you want to go out when you're running well, and I think that's – I think if this is the beginning of the end, I think we'll see him a few more seasons. But yeah, the struggles he's had this season are surprising. I look at Jeff Gordon. They've had a rough few weeks. I mean, let's be honest. They had a good car at Pocono, and strategy bit them, and they had the blowout on the radio. And then they go to Michigan, and they get tagged on pit road, and it cost them. They get the loose wheel cost them, and he had to come back in, and they're green, and they would never make that up. They've had good cars, but they're not capitalizing. And I don't, they're very different from the Tony Stewart situation, where Stewart isn't running well. Gordon is running well. He's running top five and top ten and leading some laps and doing the things you want to do if you want to put yourself in position for a win. But they're sloppy on pit road. They're making mistakes. The calls they're making on pit road aren't giving them the advantage later in the races. And I think that's going to start catching up to them, and we're seeing the frustration. But I think in terms of disappointing starts, those are my teams that I look at. As they head into the stretch of the season, we've talked about Kyle and Kurt and not Kyle. Well, we talked about Kurt and Kevin and their great starts and Jimmy. But let's talk about Kyle Busch. I mean, he went into Michigan with his one mulligan after his wreck at Dover, and he came in with that one mulligan, and he really realistically had to finish 11th to 15th every week. And he's had strong runs, top 10 runs, and bad finishes that come along with it. The run at Michigan where he was running top 10 at the time, they went back to green. There was still moisture on the track and in the air, and drivers were talking about on the radio that they didn't think they should be going back to green, but NASCAR was trying to get in a window of dry air, and they wrecked on the restart, and Kyle wrecked. And he finished, I believe he finished outside the top 40 at Michigan. And that really, it's a huge blow to his championship hopes. I mean, the 36th at Dover, the 43rd at Michigan, he is 173 points behind Justin Allgaier for 30th in the standings. How big of a blow was this for Kyle Busch? And are we now going to say that Kyle Busch will not make the chase even with a win?
I think right now, as we stand, he needs an absolute miracle to make the chase right now. And I think this is going back to whenever he did return and NASCAR granted him the waiver. They basically said, okay, if you win, you are chase eligible. However, you must be in the top 30. So it is literally going to be, was him saying, okay, you were running about, 10 less, or, well, not 10, but you were basically running a quarter of the season less, so you have a challenge on you. But you are chase eligible. If you can do it, that shows how good of a driver you are. Right now, with those two DNFs, he has, if we were to base the idea on his chances, it's basically trying to get oil out of water. It is not, in my opinion, right now, he's not only used up all his mulligans, he is out of luck. I do not see Kyle Busch, even if he does win a race, he is not going to make it. I'm sorry, I know he's a great driver, he's coming back from so much, but I just don't see it happening.
It is going to be very difficult. I mean, let's be honest. He's got to be, not only is he got to, outpace Justin Allgaier in terms of where he finishes, but he's got to pick up big chunks of points at a time and hope other guys he's chasing start to stumble and have issues. And we're at the point in the season where you don't make up big chunks of points in big blocks. And, that's the problem he's facing is, look, he's 173 points out. That means he needs to, on average, finish well inside the top 10 now at this point to get in the top 30, let alone win a race. And you still have Daytona coming up, the road courses, which are wild cards. You're not – and anything can happen at Kentucky and New Hampshire and Indianapolis and Bristol. Even though Bristol's a great track for him, still, you can be running in the top five and get wrecked by a last car at Bristol. So there are so many things that are completely out of his control. And so, look, let's be honest. What happened at Michigan – a lot of drivers were saying, look, we shouldn't be going and scanning the radios. A lot of them were talking about the rain. The track was still kind of slick. It was raining in parts of the track still. A lot of drivers were talking about it. And as soon as it happened, it was like the radios lit up with, we really shouldn't have had that restart. And I think that in NASCAR is trying to get in that window at Michigan. They're trying to get as much of the racing as they could. And you got to be, you know, for Kyle Busch, it stinks. It completely really does legitimately take him out of an outside shot of making the chase on points and then if he can bank on a win. But even with that win, I agree. I don't know if he'll be able to make the chase and get in top 30 in points, because he's banking on him being the only driver in that area, in that, you know, bubble wind area of not getting a win. There's still Daytona coming up, and any driver can win that race. And you look at Tony Stewart sitting back there, you know, he could pull off a win and you know, not and gain points on and put himself in position. So there are drivers who are in that right inside or outside the top 30 that can legitimately take Kyle Busch out of it all on their own. So it'll be very interesting to see how this stretch run goes for them. Can they capitalize and earn enough points, get capitalized? And maybe they'll show us all wrong, but I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't unfortunately make the chase this season. And NASCAR done exactly what they said. You need to be top 30 in points. They gave him the medical waiver. I didn't necessarily agree with it, but I think the fair and balanced part is they didn't necessarily waive the top 30 and it making him earn that spot just like everybody else, even though he's missed those races. We're at the top of the hour here on One Nuts and Horsepower at Blog Talk Radio Network. Appreciate you tuning in and listening as we now will focus somewhat on Michigan as we go back before the break. And we talked a little bit about that race. We know it was rain-plagued from the very beginning. It was, as Dustin said, it was just a ridiculous – NASCAR had no control over the weather and no control over how this was going to all turn out. And I think that's what made the race somewhat interesting was everybody racing the weather. I mean, Kyle Larson nearly pulled off the victory if he had been able to hold off for three more laps. And the rains came, and the rains came, and they called it. Kyle Larson would have won the race and put himself in the chase, legitimately in the top in the chase, and really putting some pressure on those guys in the back half of the chase. But there were some interesting strategy calls because it became less about wet, you know, pit rindles, more about beating the rain and being out in front when it came. And Kurt Busch really was able to take advantage of that late in the race, pulling off his second win of the season, legitimately putting him as contender for the championship. We talked about how far he has come. We look at some other drivers who had really solid finishes on the day. Was there any drivers, that you saw on that Sunday and that finish overall kind of surprised you where they finished, whether it was because they gambled on the rain and were able to stay out and take advantage, or because they got bit by the rain?
I actually am going to go with a different approach. I'm going to look at some bad timing on pit road. And I'm talking about both Kevin Harvick and Jeff Gordon, both having pit road issues. Let's face it, we rarely see that team of Kevin Harvick make or have issues on pit road. But whenever he had a tire going flat immediately after a pit stop, he knew something was wrong and something needed corrected bad. And it turned out that a crewman had accidentally hit the valve stem for the inner liner on the tire, which in essence shut or had all the air come out and he had to pit. Look at where he ended up finishing, 29th. That is not a Kevin Harvick run. Then you go to Jeff Gordon, who didn't do anything wrong on pit road. He did exactly what he does normally on a pit stop, and that is whenever that jack drops, he leaves. But immediately the crewman signaled up to Allen and said, bring him back, bring him back. He did not get all the lug nuts tight, and it wasn't his fault. It was just a bad timing on the Jackman's part to drop it and have Gordon go. He ended up coming back in. He ended up finishing like 16th or 17th, something like that. Totally outside of what he normally would at Michigan, and he was confident heading in there. So you actually, in fact, had two guys who weren't necessarily trying to beat the rain, but they couldn't beat the rain because of bad situations on pit stops.
And the thing is, both those guys had really good cars. I mean, it wasn't like they were running bad. I think Gordon got caught out by the one Gordon issue on the first stop was He got pinched on the outside curb, and it cost him a ton of track position, and they never were able really to recover. They were never able to get back into the top. And they were running top five. They were running pretty strong. They had a great qualifying effort. They were running great. And, you know, that early pit stop put them behind, and then they were never able to get back up there with how restarts go. And they on top of that pit road issue with the loose wheel. And I think, look, we all talk about the, you know, not – NASCAR not monitoring all the lug nuts. Teams are monitoring themselves. And we said this in the beginning, nobody's going to go to a place like California or Michigan and run with two lug nuts or three lug nuts at 200 plus miles per hour. So there was no choice. And Gordon knew immediately, and he came in pit road, and it cost them dearly. I mean, I really do feel like if same as Kevin Harvick, had this race weren't green, both of those guys would have found a way back into contention. They had good cars, but the weather played such a factor in this. And I think that's what, you know, Kyle Larson's gamble. I like the gamble. I like what Kyle and his crew chief, they're doing. Look, we maybe don't have the best car, but we're going to take advantage, and we're going to stay out. We're going to see if we can pull off, you know, pull off a rain win. And heck, if that's how we get in the chase, that's how we get in the chase. Nobody's going to discount that win. You know, you took advantage of what was given to you. And I think that I like that. And we want, and that's what we want. I just after the race after Michigan, and, you know, as a Gordon fan, I want to see a gamble. I want to see drivers and their crew chiefs go out there and say, look, we're not going to win this race if we do what everybody else is doing. And too many teams are too accustomed and too willing just to keep doing what the leaders are doing. And it would be nice to see more teams go out there and do like Kyle Larson's team did and gamble. You might not win. Look, 99% of the time, you're not going to win that race. But look, if it puts you in position like Kurt Busch, when the rains came out, he was in position, able, and they weren't going to go back to green with the amount of rains that moved through. Look, take it. Kyle Larson would trade anything for that win that Kurt Busch got on 2 weeks ago on Sunday. So I think more teams need to gamble. Do you believe that as we go closer to the chase, these teams maybe on the outside of the top 16 or those that are on the inside of the top 16 without a win, we're going to see far more gambling as we move closer to this chase? Or are we going to see more teams playing it safe, especially if they have that points cushion?
Oh, you're going to see gamblers. It just depends on if you're either barely outside the top 16 looking in, or if you're near the bottom towards 30th and looking in. If you're near 30th, you're going to be gambling every single week. You don't care if you are playing to your strengths at a racetrack or if you're just trying to use strategy to get better on one of your weaker tracks. Now, at the same time, if you're, say, 15th or 16th without a win, you could potentially point your way into the chase. However, you can't gamble too much. I say if you gamble at that point, gamble at tracks that you know you're good at so that if your gamble doesn't work out, you can still possibly get a solid finish out of it. So that's the key thing in my mind. You cannot gamble every single time unless you're absolutely far back in the standings where the only way you'll possibly make it in is a win. But if you're right there on the cusp where you can say, okay, even if I don't get a win, I can run well and possibly just make it in or improve my position, then gamble at your strengths. Don't gamble at your weaknesses, because then you're going to be causing more harm than you are good. So guys that are just barely on the outside or even just inside the chase right now, like a Ryan Newman, an Eric Almirola, a Paul Menard even, those guys, and even Danica has been on the cusp of potentially being in or out of the chase a few times already this season. Someone like her, if you're going to gamble to try to get that win, play to your strengths. Play to the tracks that you know you run well at, that you've possibly won at before. That's what I would do.
And I agree. I think if you're, you know, like a Ryan Newman or Eric Almirola, who are just literally on the cusp of being in the chase, you have to play it somewhat conservative right now. And maybe as you get closer to the chase, you're willing to gamble more, but you don't have much of a padding of points over the 17th, 18th, and 19th in points. You look at a Jeff Gordon, a Casey Kane, a Jamie McMurray, they've got a pretty decent, they got a 34-point edge plus over Ryan Newman and Eric Almirola right now. And that's almost a race difference. And you're coming to tracks that are really good for some of these guys who are in that little bubble. They're banking on points, getting them in. They want wins, but they're banking on being able to make it in more on points right now because they're not in contention on a weekly basis. So those guys are really do have a bigger distance. I mean, Gordon, for one, the finish at Michigan didn't help him very much because Paul Menard gained points on him. But overall, he's in a better position than a Ryan Newman and an Eric Almirola. And especially for those guys, if you're not running well, if you're running 15th through 20th on a week-to-week basis, and really Ryan Newman's been at that, been around there the last couple months, and you look at Eric Almirola, after some, he has these breakout runs, and then he kind of drops back in the pack to 15th to 20th, you know, those guys are, you know, they're going to start gambling as we get closer to Chase. But right now, you go into a Sonoma, the Sonoma's out of your hands in that regard. You go into there, you're playing pit road strategy. You're trying to outsmart the next guy. Daytona, you have zero control. You're just hoping to miss the big one and just be there at the end and come out with either a win or a solid finish. But you go to New Hampshire, you go to Indianapolis, you go to Kentucky, you go to these races coming up, those are the tracks where you can, those guys might be able to gamble, stay out on fuel, you know, kind of pick up some points, as long as those other guys have stumbled and have issues as well that they're chasing. But I think, you know, the point situation is going to get more and more important as we get closer to the chase. And so these guys cannot be giving up points. You can't go into a place like Michigan where you're a top 10 finisher and finish 20th or worse. Those are the days you want back. Those are days where, look, we have a top 10 finish. We gain some points on those guys who finish outside that. We give ourselves some cushion coming into these wild card tracks. And we talking about wild cards, Sonoma next, heading out to the West Coast for the final time in the summer here. This racetrack this weekend represents a whole other wild card, we'll call a wild card race. Coming in, what's the mentality for these guys who maybe are looking at Sonoma as their chance to win and get in the chase, like an AJ Allmendinger, who has had tons of success on the road course. And now with Marcus Ambrose not in Sprint Cup anymore, and you take Juan Pablo Montoya out of the mix coming up, you know, those guys who were kind of road course ringers, for AJ Allmendinger, how big of a weekend is Sonoma?
Let's put it like this. You said earlier in the broadcast, right now, the hands-down favorite, and the odds are on them right now, those are on the number 24 of Gordon. And clearly, because of his history at the track, of the two road courses, he's had the most success at Sonoma. That's not taking away the fact that he won four races at Watkins Glen, including three in a row from 97 to 99. He also won three in a row at Sonoma, and then picked up a fourth back in, I think it was 2006 or 2007, the same weekend that he got engaged to Ingrid. So he's just as good, if not better, at this road course, considering the fact that he's also a California man. So he's in his home state. But then your next favorite to go into this race, it's hands down Allmendinger. You have to clearly believe that if Allmendinger is going to steal a win from one of these guys, it is at this track or at Watkins Glen. And I think that everybody is actually considering the fact that Gordon would be the first favorite. I would certainly put AJ Allmendinger as the second, without question.
It's a big weekend for AJ. Like, he needs to come out and he needs to run well and he needs to be in contention. Even if he doesn't win, he can gain points on those guys who don't consider road course racing their best style of racing. So if he goes out there and finishes top five, it puts himself in position heading into Daytona where he can gain some points, give him a little cushion heading into what will be Watkins Glen in about a month and a half. So this is a big weekend for AJ Allmendinger and his team. And the lack of testing does impact this. I mean, let's think about it. Last year, this team used their test at the road courses. They tested at Sonoma. They tested at Watkins Glen. And that was what he attributed his win at Watkins Glen was they were able to test at these tracks, and they used those tests, and they got all the data, and they were able to come with the best package that they felt was that would be there to their advantage when they came back to these tracks. And he had solid runs at Sonoma last year, and he had, of course, he won and got himself in the chase. This is a big weekend for a guy like AJ, and he needs to come out of it with something other than he needs to finish top five. Anything less than a top five for AJ at this point is a loss when it comes to the road course races. And his stronger of the tracks is actually Watkins Glen, and he's had a lot better finishes at Watkins Glen. So I feel like Sonoma kind of is his handicap in that regard, but this is a chance to capitalize. Are there any other drivers coming into this weekend other than AJ who can really capitalize on the road course and take advantage and maybe not only gain points but put themselves in a position to pull off maybe a surprise win?
How about a guy that came back to the sport that is actually in the same numbered car that last year was ran by Ambrose? How about a guy that's been in IndyCar, ran a lot of road courses, had a lot of success on road courses? How about a guy like Sam Hornish Jr.? What a weekend this could be for the other driver of the RPM bunch. I actually think, as far as the underdog goes, that's one that I think a lot of people may not be picking, but definitely should consider.
That's a good point. We don't really talk about AJ in that regard because he hasn't shown the week-to-week speed, but this is a guy who's had a ton of success on road courses in IndyCar. He can bring that over and really can, capitalize on his success in IndyCar on these type of races, style of races. I look at Danica Patrick, as well as another driver who, you know, very well could come out of a solid finish and really kind of boost her hopes to making the chase. And hopefully in that regard, and gain points on Newman, Boyer, and Larson. I mean, she's about 40 points. She's not that far off from Ryan Newman, but she's got a handful of points between her and Clint Boyer, and that she can make up this weekend. And Clint Boyer is a racer we don't talk about at road course. He has a win there, but he's shown a lot of strength at road courses. So there's a few guys back in the pack there that they can come out. Tony Stewart as well can come out and pull off a surprise win and put themselves in position to make the chase. So the guys who are winless right now, the Jamie McMurray, the Jeff Gordon, the Casey Kane, Paul Menard, and those guys who have no wins right now, they have to be a little nervous coming in the next couple stretch of races because really these are two of the biggest wild cards that we have going into the chase right now. How nervous are those drivers who don't have wins coming into this weekend at Sonoma, where there again, a driver from behind them in the pack could pull off a surprise win on them?
I think they're both nervous, but they're also eager. Because for somebody like Gordon, yes, you know that both Sonoma and Daytona are wild card races. However, you come into these races nervous but optimistic, given past success. And we, as we said, someone like Gordon, we've seen how good he is on the road courses. He's also won the summer race at Daytona a few times. So you come into the race nervous because you know that someone could steal that victory that normally wouldn't on a weekly basis, but you also come in optimistic knowing that you are just as good as them, if not better.
I think Gordon has to be really confident coming this weekend. They haven't really, their finishes haven't shown, but they've had the speed. I mean, and they've had moments where you thought, wow, they're turning the corner, and then strategy bites them or mistake bites them. But they really have shown that they are more than capable of running up front. So, and we saw them the last couple of years. I mean, at Sonoma alone, they finished runner-up the last few years. I think there was a stretch of like three or four races in a row where he finished second or third. And really, if not, if only for a late race caution, Gordon would have won those races. I mean, even last year, he was hard charging at the end there and just needed a caution to catch back up. And he barely missed that opportunity to take that win last year at Sonoma. So this is a track where they've played strategy very well. Now they have to capitalize. And Gordon knows what he needs on a road course, and Allen needs to figure out a way to capitalize, because this is their best opportunity to make up points and gain points on the guys they're chasing in the standings who don't have wins, to give themselves a better cushion heading into Daytona in 2 weeks, where they're all bets are off when we hit the Daytona. So I agree. I think those guys have to be nervous, though. You still have to come in with the mentality that, look, we could come in this weekend and finish top five and come out with what is considered a victory, or we can go this weekend and finish 20th and really lose a lot of points. It could be a great weekend or a disaster teetering on the edge with those points, and not having wins every week is going to be like that. And so it should be to see what strategy plays out, and I like Sonoma, so it should be fun to see which team capitalizes and picks the right strategy. As we focus now on Sonoma, we thank you for tuning in and listening to Love Nuts and Horsepower and the Blog Talk Radio Network. As we focus on Sonoma and for the final run of the show here, looking at the last few years, what stood out to you in this race the last couple of years in terms of overall strategy, when drivers pitted, when drivers don't pit, and how does that play into how will that play into Sunday's race? Do we go back to last year's notes with the different package for these cars, or with this new package, are we kind of clean notebook starting from scratch?
Oh, you can definitely go back to last year's notes, because honestly, the rules package with the reduced horsepower and the shorter spoiler and all of this and all that it entails. It really doesn't have a big effect on the road courses, because you don't notice aerodynamics at this track. You don't notice horsepower whenever you get to a road course. It's all mainly in the hands of the driver, mainly how and when you shift, when you time your passes. Because at Sonoma, you have so very few true opportunities to make passes, mainly going up the hill from turns one to turns two. Then you have turn four as you're going down the hill into turns, well, I think would be five, make the right-hander, then turn seven, which would lead into the S-corners, and then obviously you have the best passing zone, which is turn 11, the downhill slow right-hander, which is commonly a very key and very critical point in the racetrack. So, honestly, you can definitely use the notes that you had from a year ago, even 2 years ago. Whenever the Gen 6 car was first introduced, I definitely believe that this track is an equalizer, because you don't look at horsepower. You don't look at aerodynamics. You could probably run here with a crushed-in fender, as we've seen happen a few times before, and still run top 10, top 5, and potentially win. So absolutely, go to those notes from last year or years prior, and you can make it work.
I agree. I think to a certain extent, I think while the horsepower differences, you really won't really feel them as drastic as you would at a Michigan or a California, but I think there's a little difference in how the car handles and feels, especially with the S's. I think that'll be a factor. Oftentimes, if I am looking back to some of my notes, other drivers talk about being tight through the S's. I think now this car generally is dry. The feel of the car is very tight, which has been a benefit to some and not to others. But I think we've seen that a lot of times, at these road courses, even though we don't feel like the horsepower difference can be a huge factor, I still think it will be. I think there will be points in terms of when on the track where we're going to see the horsepower difference. But I agree. I think you can go back to those notes. You can utilize those notes. The strategy might be different. I mean, let's be honest, drivers, we run these races from the end to the beginning when it comes to road courses. So we really want to stop in three stops. If you can do it in two, even better for you, but you're banking, you're hoping you don't get a caution when you're off cycle and put yourself behind. But I think the biggest factor is going to be how do the pit road calls and how will these impact? I mean, they're a huge impact, obviously, but you know, what comes into making the right call? I mean, we talk about week-to-week basis. Crew chiefs have a major role in that now. This is going to be another big test for these crew chiefs to make the right pit decision, when to pit, when not to pit, and when to take advantage of those guys who maybe are pitting out of cycle. How big are the crew chiefs this weekend when it comes to making that decision?
I think that this is the time whenever the crew chief is at their best because they are working from the end of the race backwards, and it also is a race where you literally have to make split second decisions and be like, okay, we have to change this now, and to get our driver to the front, you have to make those critical changes in due course because it could change in a matter of instance. We've seen these road courses have great timing where the strategy, it looks like it's going to be a green flag run and it's a clear winner. Then all of a sudden you have that caution where you only have like maybe 4 or 5 laps to go and you are at the point where, okay, the field's bunched up. They are going to be all over one another. So the crew chief really has to make the right call to put their driver in that position and go for it and basically say, driver, do it.
So we talked a little about the favorites of this weekend. Who is to you who's not somebody we've talked about and who really he's not a favorite or not a guy from the back in the pack in terms of the points, but who to you is a driver we should be looking at as maybe an underdog this weekend heading into this race?
You know, what's really surprising is somebody that we have not talked about but is a former winner here. He won here in 2013, keep in mind. And I'm talking about Martin Truex Jr. He's already got a win this season. He's already that strong of a driver, he's going to be in the chase. But we're not really talking about him right now, and yet he is very good at road courses. So I'm actually going to keep my eye on that Colorado team this weekend.
You know what? I'm actually watching Kurt Busch. He's shown some strength this season, obviously a lot of speed. I'm wondering if he can continue that strength and pull off a win at California and get and really cement himself, not only with that second win at Michigan, but really cement himself as a true contender for this championship in 2015. He's shown so much speed. He's shown a lot. I mean, his poise has been there. You know, when things haven't gone his way, he's really, really, really shown the growth that people questioned for so long. I really think this is a good weekend for Kurt Busch. He's shown speed on these road courses. If he can beat some of the bad luck, he's a guy that I'm definitely keeping an eye on when it comes to this weekend and what he can do, on track in terms of putting himself in a better position in the chase as they move forward. So I want to jump a little forward because of news that we'll be talking about in a few minutes. But I want to look really quickly at Daytona and what is the wild card, biggest wild card of them all, as we head into this run in the summer. Looking at Daytona and where we take away what we don't know what will come this weekend, but how big of a weekend is this going to be for those backside drivers that we've been talking about today, especially with Sonoma coming up. But, you know, if you don't get a win at Sonoma, you're banking on possibly being there in Daytona. What are the factors coming into Daytona that we have to think about in terms of, for these teams who are banking on points or banking on a win to get in right now outside the top 16?
You know, here it's so critical how it's hard to describe what you really need. I think here, unless you already have a win in the bank, you are not really worried about, say, qualifying or practice. You are clearly just waiting to get going. I think a lot of these drivers now, with restrictor plate races, they want to get it over with, especially with so much unpredictability, so much out of their hands. it's so hard to really even for the drivers and the teams to predict what is going to happen. Probably if you were at the back, you were thinking, okay, I need to have a good qualifying run to at least get myself in the field. But if you don't make it out of the first round, that's fine. You're in the race. Then you can plan your strategy for the actual race, since it is an impound, and then go from there. So Daytona, to me, in all honesty, is a very, very difficult race to plan a strategy for. And at the same time, this year it's on a slightly different day. Normally this is run on a Saturday night. This year they're running it on a Sunday night. So I think that also plays a factor into it, because it's going to be end up being a week afterwards.
It's definitely a big difference, too, because we were talking, I mean, even though it's one night difference, the weather could be a factor. And we're talking, let's look at qualifying, for example. They're sticking with the same qualifying they did at Talladega, thankfully, which was the kind of one-car qualifying, but it was constant. There was always a car on track. And we talked a little bit after that, how much of an improvement that was over what we saw at Daytona in February. Coming back now to Daytona, how much of an impact we saw at Talladega, how you really didn't pick up much of a draft on the driver on track in front of you, but how much of an impact is that qualifying change going to have overall coming into Daytona?
I think it actually is a very big difference compared to what we were looking at as Daytona in February. And let's be honest, qualifying at Daytona in February was a cluster. I'll let you all insert the appropriate word here so we can keep this a G-rated show, or PG at best. But then whenever we got to Talladega and they said, you know what, single car runs are the best option here. And we saw that drivers really, they had a one and done. You really didn't have any other opportunity to get back at it and go to it, especially considering the fact that you only have two rounds. So you have to go all out for that first round of qualifying to make sure you are fast. And if you make that top 12, then you have to make sure that you're just as fast and that your car is also cooled down enough to where you can go full tilt and not risk pushing out any of the water in the radiator. Because, again, this is an impound race. You cannot work on the car after qualifying. They look for and say, okay, you gotta wait until race day to even touch it. So qualifying, I think now, with it being the single car runs as it was years before, is enormous.
Yeah, I think qualifying is going to be the biggest wild card. I mean, you really can start anywhere. You really don't, you can start anywhere in the field and get to the front. But you really don't want to start in the hornet's nest, especially in the beginning of the race. We've seen wrecks happen within the first few laps. And if you're running 15th or 20th, you're going to be automatically wrapped into it, and your day's over before it really even had a shot to begin. So I don't really see teams and drivers, I think qualifying can be as important as it was in February, where track position was fairly important, especially as the race went on. And if you were, we saw it at Talladega as well, you really, the bottom didn't go at Talladega. And so you really wanted to see, those guys who qualified well were able to stay up front. They were contending for that win at the end. And yeah, in the end, it was single file, but the way it played out and who won, I guess, we know Junior won it at Talladega. It really did. Qualifying well was a huge factor in that. So I definitely think, I just want to put fast forward to Daytona and looking at that qualifying package. And we'll see if NASCAR does make any changes. As of now, I have not seen or I haven't received anything. Usually we get that within a week out. So we'll see within the next couple days, especially after Sonoma, if there'll be any qualifying changes. But I think NASCAR is fairly happy with the package and with the qualifying sessions that they had at Talladega. So, as you can tell, as the show went on, I've gotten a little bit more nervous with our news. I kind of hinted at it earlier before we start to wrap up. This will be my final show as a co-host on Long Nuts and Horsepower, moving forward with some other things. And my time is, I can't give the time that I need to give right now. So I made that decision recently. So this will be my last show. I was trying not to get upset. But it's been, Dustin and I have been doing this for so long as a team. And we've had a ton of fun from when Rob was on the show and us, the trio, and our fun conversations. And so it's hard to believe, for me at least, it's coming to an end today. But Dustin will continue. We're starting to work some of that stuff out in the coming weeks as to where the show will go for Dustin and where what's going to happen. So there will be a racing talk show, but it's just a matter of working those details out. But I wanted to just thank Dustin, for one, for putting up with my shenanigans, because quite frankly, he probably would have fired me months ago with my tardiness, which is stellar. And, you know, so I do appreciate it. And it's been fun talking racing, and I love this. And we'll still follow and be writing on my website, so still be doing that, but just stepping away from some other things in the process, making some other changes. So this was one of those things I had to make a decision on, and it wasn't easy, but I just wanted to be able to explain. It's kind of sudden for Dustin. I literally told him this morning because I was struggling with it, and I knew telling him, obviously, as today was my last show, but just making sure that things were in set for other moving forward for him was my biggest concern, as he's always done for me. So I just wanted to thank him, and thank you guys for welcoming me talking racing. And sometimes I make no sense, and I can admit that, but I appreciate it, and I get lots of kind words from people. I truly appreciate you guys downloading and listening to our show and all that you do to help keep us going here on our show on a weekly basis, normally, when I don't forget, on a weekly basis. So, but again, I want to thank everybody. And as we move forward, I will tweet as I hear news from Dustin on what the show is going to be. There's some things in talk, so hopefully we'll be able to, he'll be able to announce that as soon as he can and things are worked out in that regard. But again, appreciate it so much. And yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's like the end of an era for us, Dustin. We've been like hanging out for like 5+ years. I think it's been like 5 years of doing the show from the very beginning.
5 years that basically since we started with Fan versus Fan back in late 2010, early 2011. I think that's whenever we started. It's been a long ride. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I was terrified the first show. And I think the first show, my power went out and I couldn't even do the first show. And kind of set up
what
was the run.
Yeah, you did. Because I all of a sudden, whenever we first got the show, we were like, hey, she had a power outage. She's not going to be on. But we do have a backup that I think you're familiar with. So I do remember that.
Yeah, it actually was fairly similar to how my entire run on the show went, where random ridiculous things happen, and I'm, you know, unfortunately unable to be on. But yeah, it's been a fun ride, and I just, you know, times led me to other directions, and so I'll still be riding and following the sport, and hopefully be at more of the track, and other things have come up away from racing that I have to focus on. So. You know, I'm trying not to get upset. I practiced all the way home. I'm not kidding you. I practiced all the way home what I was going to say, and I said nothing when I practiced. So, but it should be fun, and I'm looking forward to listening to the show when you guys get back at it, and continuing to chime in, hopefully be able to come on once in a while and spew my wisdom, which is what I'm going to call it because I'm leaving, so I can call it wisdom. So, but I do appreciate it, and we'll get back to the business of racing. But I wanted to, as we start to close out the show a little bit, come up on your website and what can we expect with the monster trucks and things coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Well, it is going to be a really fun, exciting time here over the next couple of weeks, because obviously we have the upcoming weekend, then we head to Daytona, and then it's going to be my big weekend away. I shouldn't say away, but away from NASCAR, because on July 10th through the 12th is my annual yearly trek out to Bloomsburg for the four-wheel Jamboree Nationals, and anybody that follows me on Twitter, that is my second home. The people at Family Events have been so good to me over the years. They just keep getting better. They actually this year are allowing me to also come to Indianapolis, which will come in September. But I'm going to have a full-on weekend there, including video coverage with interviews with not only drivers and team members, but also the people that make Family Events do such great shows. And I have a lot of new video coverage that I'm going to do online on my YouTube channel. So there will be, including a new opening, more interviews, more me being actually on camera too. So it's a whole lot of good is coming up with the four-wheel Jamboree Nationals and the General Tire Monster Truck Thunder Drags. So I'm going to have full coverage that upcoming weekend. I obviously will have the pool going, even though that weekend is the Kentucky race, so it's going to suck that I'm going to actually miss the race for the most part. But I'm looking forward to being able to share my experiences. And, you know, I know we're closing out the show, but my God, 5 years of the original two on the radio over the years, and it is sad to see it go. But obviously everybody that knows Rob Tjongson, who writes for the Podium Finish on Fan versus Fan, we are going to work out a way to keep Lugnuts and Horsepower and or the Podium Finish, get it back on the air, because we know Rob has an incredible audience and is able to get a lot of great folks to join in. I'm looking forward to work, and we're going to be working to get together to make it a lot of fun. But, you know, all good things must come to an end. But in reality, it's not the end. It's just, I always say, you're stepping away. And I'm not losing a teammate. We're basically just combining. It's like whenever Everett Hamm Motorsports and Petty Enterprises combine, I guess is a way to think about it.
That didn't end very well.
it did not end very well, but, you know, I'm just saying. Okay, let's go the other way. It's whenever Roush and Yates combined. How about that? Okay?
That's perfect.
We'll
like
use that as another reference. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Rob wants to do. So I am not sure if we're going to be on the air next week. If we're not going to be on the air, I promise you we will get back on the air soon to have a lot of coverage. But, you know, All About Horsepower is where you'll find the pool this upcoming weekend. You'll be able to find all the Monster Truck coverage. You're going to be able to find the Stadium Super Trucks still going on. They're heading to England later this season for the next race, and I'm looking forward to it. So looking forward to Sonoma, and I'm looking forward to see what Patty has coming up on the site as well. It's going to be tough to see her go, but, hey, we're still going to be rolling here with this team.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and I'm trying really hard not to get upset, and I, like, fought it all day, so I do appreciate it. It's crazy. I was thinking about it all day. I'm like, I can't believe it's been this long that we've done this show. And, it's been fun. And I really do enjoy it. And, you know, it's been – I don't know if this opportunity would – I would never have this opportunity at other places to be able to do this on a weekly basis. And so it's crazy to think that this is really kind of it for me. But I'll still be writing, and I'm hoping to put more focus into that and do other things within moving forward in different areas. So hopefully I'll be able to – you'll follow me on Twitter still on fanbfan_lugnuts and my website, nascarlugnuts.com, and continue to download and listen to this show, because so excited for what's to come for Dustin and for Rob. It might take a couple weeks, but I'm so excited to see what they're going to be bringing for you guys, because those two combined, their passion for the sport and their hard work across all realms of motorsports is seriously, like, they don't get the credit they deserve. And so I'm excited to see what's going to come for them and for me in other ways. So I do appreciate it. And with that, this is the final time for me. We will talk to you soon on Lugnuts and Horsepower on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Have a great night and enjoy Sonoma.
Do you have a passion for sports and do you need to get your opinion out on the web? Do you love debating about those sports that you love? So why aren't you registered on www.fanversefan.com? FanVersFan is a website where anyone can sign up, start a blog, debate your favorite sports, and even make some money in the process. If you're a beginner, that's okay, because FanVersFan is packed with tools and tricks to help you get started. So if you're an aspiring writer who's looking to get your opinion on the web, be sure to visit www.fanversefan.com to start your own blog today.